I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and this is Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. We're here to wish AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, happy 80th birthday. Actually, tomorrow, June 10th, will be the 80th birthday. It was founded in 1935, and surprisingly, ironically, and happily, the 80th birthday party will be celebrated here in Atlanta over the weekend of July 2nd through the 5th, 2015, will be the home of the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. The theme is happy, joyous, and free, and the official location will be the Georgia Convention Center and the Georgia Dome. There will be people in recovery coming from around the world. These conventions are held every 5 years and have been stunts and have been held, since 1950 when they very first started these conventions. They've been held primarily in the United States and Canada in major cities. Because Atlanta is known as the Phoenix City, or the city that rose out of the ashes after being burned during the Civil War, this theme relates and resonates very well with members of Alcoholics Anonymous and other 12-step programs that celebrate the rise from the ashes, from the disease of addiction, and their ability to move forward and to be happy, joyous, and free. Part of the celebration will be focusing on what AA calls the three legacies. The three legacies of AA are recovery, unity, and service. Bill W., in 1957, in his writing AA Comes of Age, wrote, "By the first we recover from alcoholism," which is, of course, the first legacy of recovery. "By the second we stay together in unity. And by the third, our social and our society functions and serves its primary purpose of carrying the AA message to all who need it and all who want it." So this organization is 80 years old, and the question on the table today, has it become irrelevant? Do people really need AA? Does AA serve any sort of useful purpose in modern-day recovery? Now that we know a lot about the brain, we have brain imaging studies, we can do genetic testing, we have medication-assisted recovery, what's really the role of AA? There was a recent article in The Atlantic magazine talking about this very question. What is the role and what are the problems with AA? So here to help me answer those questions are two experts in the field of recovery, David Donaldson, the CEO of the Atlanta Healing Center, and Michael Daly, the COO of the Atlanta Healing Center. Thank you both for being here today and helping to address this question. What's the role of AA, and is it still relevant here in the 21st century?
Thank you, Susan. I'm very glad to be here today. I'm excited that this is that we're approaching the 80th birthday of AA tomorrow. I think it's helped millions of people, and the breakoff groups that have come from Alcoholics Anonymous, the family groups of Al-Anon, the groups that for other drugs like Narcotics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and Co-Anon and Codependency Anonymous, all of these 12-step groups have been instrumental in people finding a way to recover the first leg and then finding a way to once again be an active and vital part of society. I think I personally have witnessed many, many families heal, utilizing both treatment as well as the recovery resources of AA. And so, yeah, I think it is amazingly relevant and a great gift to people with the disease of addiction.
Thank you. I would have to agree with David. I think it's very relevant. I think that in addition to treatment, as you as the intensity of the treatment program starts to step down, that's when AA can be stepped up. And I think that almost everyone that has some place to go and some place that there's like-minded people with the same goal, mm-hmm. with the same aspiration, it just makes it easier. And recovery is hard enough without trying to do it on your own and not having a support system. And there's not too many organizations in the world that you can go anywhere in the world and you're accepted. You know, it's the ultimate kind of networking and helpful organization in so many ways. So
the question that I think has been raised, and it's one that we hear a lot, both from patients who are seeking out treatment or family members who are looking for a way to get some help for their family members or for themselves. We often hear, well, we don't want that 12-step stuff. Are you a 12-step program? What do you think has created this sense of negativity or shunning of this particular pathway? And it's one of many, and AA itself, I don't think, claims to be the one and only way for someone to get into recovery. But I'm sometimes surprised by the reaction I get from people clearly directed at 12-step recovery, saying, I don't want this, and I'm not interested in that.
I think that sometimes David and I have a little disagreement.
Oh, good.
on this subject. I say very that the one of the big pushbacks is the word God. And people don't understand that it's a God of their own understanding. It's a higher power. It can be many things to you personally. But that initial idea of God sets fear to everyone that has a problem with AA. Now, folks that have never had any kind of a disagreement with the church or with whatever religion they were born into, some of those folks don't have a problem with it. But there's many people that in as their disease ramps up, their participation in organized religion falls.
Right.
And so by the time that they get to AA, they're a little bit against it, just from the start. And that may very well be a fear, but it may be a real fear.
Well, and I do think that as a society that there's movement away from organized religion, and there's movement towards saying I believe in God, but nothing beyond that, and it's not something that should be talked about in public. And so the idea that AA does use the word God throughout its steps and does really state very, very clearly that without a spiritual experience, many people will not recover. The message gets interpreted that AA is simply there as a way to help drunks find God, which isn't at all the real message of AA and not the primary purpose of AA at all. It's a wonderful, nice side effect when it happens, but it's certainly not a requirement. So Michael can be pretty verbose in his statement that God is the barrier for a lot of people. My perspective is that God is the excuse for a lot of people, because I think most addicts and alcoholics have some pretty significant social anxieties. I think that by the time they've gotten to a point where their disease has really progressed, they've gotten really isolated. They've gotten to a point where their ability to handle perceived judgment, perceived snobbery, perceived reactions from other people has gotten really great. And so they have a very big fear of going to this meeting where people are going to sit around and talk about drugs and alcohol. that they're going to be looked at funny, or they're going to be judged, or they're going to feel embarrassed or feel stupid. And so they cling on to the word God as an excuse for not going and walking through those fears.
So both of them may be fear-based kinds of reactions that people have. And my experience has been, of course, we fear the things we don't understand. And I think a lot of what happens, people speak very boldly and very directly about their opposition to 12-step recovery programs, Alcoholics Anonymous in particular. But it's always interesting to me as I talk to them and ask them, have you ever been to a meeting? Well, no, but they've heard about one. I'll ask them, have you picked up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, no, not really. Or I read a little bit, can't really tell me what part they read, and yet they have a very adamant opinion that they don't want to do this and this is not for them. So I think some of this is very clearly fear-based, and they are afraid. They're afraid of being uncomfortable, whether that's with the idea of a spiritual part of recovery or whether that's fear of the unknown, fear of going into a place where they don't know the people and they don't know what's going to happen and they don't know what's going to be expected of them. And the fact that it's anonymous makes them also wonder, is this a secret society of some sort of
cult
that is going to
brainwash
me and take all of my money and my willpower, all of that kind of thing. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions. William White, in his fabulous book, and it's now in second edition, called Slaying the Dragon, he's a historian who spends a lot of his time and efforts writing about recovery and the treatment field. He talks about this whole idea that even in the very beginning of AA, there were a lot of misconceptions. There were a lot of rumors. There were a lot of ideas that were picked up by the general public and sometimes by new AA members themselves who hadn't really spent much time studying and understanding the program, and that these kinds of misconceptions have continued throughout the years and seem to be, for whatever reason, being brought up to the public again currently, and we're seeing these various articles regarding 12 steps, and the article of the irrationality of Alcoholics Anonymous by Gabriel Glazer in The Atlantic, I think, is one of a number that I've seen talking about AA and some of the myths and the misconceptions that have been held over the years.
It was actually a huge controversy throughout the AA community and the 12-step community because it was a direct attack, or perceived as a direct attack, against AA. As you read the article, it's more of a direct attack against the treatment community, in the sense that so many treatment centers really are just providing AA, which is free in the community, and not providing anything else. But I mean, there are some points in there that she makes in terms of not really being able to verify the statistics of AA and not really being able to verify that it works, that you know, may or may not be valid. There is a lot of people who actually can very clearly talk about, this is how I was and this is how I am today, going back 80 years. And there's people that will be at the conference this July that will be talking about being sober 35, 40, 50 years, people who remember the founders that will be there. So it obviously does work for a lot of people, but it isn't treatment. And so the gist of why we're spending so much money in treatment facilities to teach AA is a legitimate complaint.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of these controversies. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be right back.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction. Today we're saying happy birthday to Alcoholics Anonymous. Tomorrow on June 10th will be the 80th birthday, and Atlanta is going to be officially hosting the 80th birthday party here over the weekend of July 2nd through July 5th. It will be held at the World Congress Center and the Georgia Dome. These celebrations are held every 5 years. This one in particular will be celebrating 80 years since Bill W. and Dr. Bob established Alcoholics Anonymous. Our topic today has been discussing what's the role of AA and has it become irrelevant with science, with medicine, with more advances in the treatment community itself. Do we need to think about, can it still be helpful? And David, before the break, you were talking about the Glaser article and her comments that on the surface appeared directed towards AA, but really in many ways may have been directed against the recovery and treatment community itself, because many of the treatment centers here in the United States, at least, are very much what we call abstinence-based 12-step programs. And many of them use 12 steps and having patients work through a certain number of steps while the patient is in treatment as part of their treatment program. I think that has to be separated a little bit from the evidence-based practice of 12-step facilitation. There was a very pivotal study called the MATCH study that looked at cognitive behavioral therapy, that looked at motivational enhanced therapy, and also looked at 12-step facilitation therapy to see which was more likely to be successful in terms of patients' continued abstinence after discharge. Those studies showed that all three of those particular types of interventions were almost equally successful. The difficulty, I think, when most of us look at those particular modalities is that there's a difference between following the 16, I believe, modules that are in a 12-step facilitation model of treatment, which is which requires that each of the clinicians involved in the application or the presentation of those services be very clearly educated and then supervised, and that people follow the manual, if you will, very closely. And it's not just about let's have an AA meeting and let's have you work the steps and let's pretend like I'm your sponsor even though I'm listed as your addiction counselor or your therapist. So those particular modalities of treatment in this study were very prescriptive types of interventions and therapies based, and the 12-step facilitation is based on principles of 12-step. But it's not just we're going to host some 12-step meetings and we're going to call that treatment. So separating that from the idea that most treatment centers call themselves 12-step abstinence-based programs, and they really are not necessarily using this evidence-based practice, I think, is part of the concern.
Yeah, and she really does not make that distinction in her article. Her emphasis is on the millions of dollars that Americans are spending through our insurance and through private pay in treatment these days, and what they're really getting is people in recovery, teaching people how they did it and taking them to meetings and getting them to do step work and basically things that they can get for free at AA meetings, and giving and being given the message, and this is the point that she really puts a big emphasis on, being given the message that this is the only way, that AA is the only way to recovery and success, and if you haven't been able to make it, it's because you're non-compliant, or you're constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself, or there's some aspect of you that's causing you to not be able to be one of the ones that makes it with AA. That portion of it, I think, is a bit of what really got the AA community up in arms, in the sense that you know, AA does not at all say we are the only way. Part of the article that you were highlighting earlier said, you know, talking about what AA is not. AA would not state any of the claims that she's putting on AA, but the emphasis that she was really having, that so many places give the message AA is the only way. And then finally, in her article, she begins to move towards newer approaches, new evidence-based approaches, but not really in a therapeutic model so much as in a medication-assisted model. And one particular medicated-assisted model that people have been trying to use in some areas where people are able to do safe modified drinking, which for me made it a little dangerous because the alcoholics that I know and love and work with, really, even with the benefit of this type of medication, don't enjoy just regular, safe drinking, and generally will become non-compliant with the medication in order to get the benefit they want from the drinking.
I think that's a very interesting idea, that people can learn to drink responsibly and people can learn to drink normally, as though they had learned to drink irresponsibly before and that it was a learned behavior that can be unlearned. I think there probably are some people, and I think this is where we get a lot of false hope happening among our patients. Because I know that there are situations where people have been drinking or using drugs because of a difficult situation, a bad time in their life, or they're in college and they are experimenting and doing some things, maybe out of control kinds of things, that get them into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been using drugs or alcohol. They get into trouble. There's a consequence. The reaction by their loved ones or the courts or the people around them or their employer says go to treatment. Mm-hmm. So these folks have never really tried on their own to stop. They've never tried to modify their behavior because they've gone from drinking and using to treatment. These folks go to treatment and have some education. At some point in their future, they try drinking again, which is not uncommon.
Not at all.
With people who have the disease of addiction. But for some of these folks, I have to question whether they really had the disease of addiction. Those folks that can go back out, as we talk about, and drink normally, take pain medication responsibly, don't get into trouble again, can modify their behavior, those are not the folks that I know and love that have the disease of addiction. These are folks that I think sometimes were misdiagnosed and don't really have the disease of addiction. Adds to the confusion because they can go back out and they can drink reasonably and responsibly, which then makes all the people in their 12-step programs want to go out and try and do this too. It's a disaster for people who really do have this brain disease, unfortunately.
Right. And the danger in that is, what is the percentage of those people? I mean, the reality is there's a whole lot of those people that are going to go out, and yes, they are indeed an alcoholic. And sometimes that re-going back out is the one that keeps you out for a very, very, very long period of time until something bad happens again.
Mm-hmm.
So that cost is pretty high. I think that it's interesting, you know, in talking about all these things with Alcoholics Anonymous and with this article, the thing is that AA is one of the very few treatment models that say the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. You know, it doesn't talk about you have to be successful at it. It doesn't talk about you have to pay us money to do it. It doesn't talk about anything but a desire to stop.
And you can keep coming back.
And you can keep coming back, and you can keep trying over and over and over and over again.
And it doesn't matter if you are not able to be successful even for one day. The idea is that you keep trying and you keep coming back. And AA doesn't kick you out or shun you or ban you or say, don't come back because you're a failure. They say, keep coming back.
Keep trying.
And that, I think, is so important. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the misconceptions about AA. Thanks for listening.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Tracy Pearson at Prissy Tomboy. Are you looking for a way to inspire your preteen to teen girl to get outside and play? Listen to the Prissy Tomboy radio show every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on America's Web Radio.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is Georgia author Doug Dahlgren. I've got a new program starting here June 12th at 11 a.m. It's called The Prologue, and we'll be introducing you to other writers you may not have heard of yet. Join us, won't you, starting June 12th, 11 a.m. here on America's Web Radio.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and this is Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. I did want to remind our listeners that the Atlanta Healing Center, along with Pavilion Treatment Center, are hosting a Lunch and Learn on Friday, June 26th. Thank you, Michael. June 26th from 11 till 1 p.m. Continuing education units will be provided for a small charge, and lunch will be served. If you're interested in visiting with us, coming to see the Atlanta Healing Center and learning more about cognitive effects of drugs and alcohol on the brain, please join us and contact Michael Daly at 770-696-9862, 770-696-9862, or visit our website, atlantahealingcenter.com, for more details. Again, that's on Friday, June 26th, 11 to 1 p.m. We'd love to see you there. So before the break, we were talking about the issues related to controlled drinking and the confusion that sometimes happens when people may have been misdiagnosed and may not have the disease of addiction and are able to go back out and use drugs and alcohol responsibly. That is the fantasy, the wish, the desire, the hope, the prayer of 99.9% of the folks that I work with on a daily basis. They're pretty sure that they could be that guy or gal, and they want to give it a try. There's actually a program called the Sinclair Method, where people take an opiate blocker. This is a medication that acts on opiate receptors, the pain medication receptors in the brain, and it shuts those off. A certain subset of alcoholics also, when they drink, activate those opiate receptors. And the opiate receptors for this subset, not every alcoholic, but a subset of alcoholics, this activation of the opiate receptors in the brain adds to the experience, adds to the high, the pleasure. These are the alcoholics that tend to use alcohol to enhance a situation. So they are the ones that say, this is a great party, let's make it a really great party, and alcohol gives them that euphoria. These are the people that are risk takers, that like high adrenaline kinds of activities, and part of that is because not just dopamine, our pleasure chemical, being released, but they're also getting this activation of the opiate receptors, and for these people, when they use naltrexone, that decreases some of the euphoria and the pleasant effect. Doesn't work for all people, and that's, I think, problem number one with this method. Problem number two is that you have to take the naltrexone for it to be effective. The experience that Dr. Sinclair and his group want you to have is to continue drinking while taking naltrexone, with the idea that you drink, you have a few drinks, you don't get nearly as high, you don't get nearly the buzz or the euphoria or the pleasure, so why would you keep doing it? And the idea is that these folks can go out and enjoy wine with dinner or the taste of a beer with their hot dog, not get a buzz, lose the desire to continue to drink because it's not reinforcing anymore, and that as long as they take this medication, they are able then to drink normally. So the the third problem is, again, for people who have the brain disease of addiction, this doesn't last very long, and people are really not able in the long run to make this kind of behavior and treatment, if you'll call it treatment, work.
Well, and the interesting thing is many people that get to treatment or get to AA have tried their own little experiments all the way along the way. You know, over and over again, they've tried modifying drinking. They've tried not drinking beer, just drinking liquor, not drinking liquor, just drinking wine, not drinking after, you know, a certain hour, having a drink and then a glass of water, and it just doesn't work. They always find themselves over drinking sooner or later again. And but the cost is great. You know, the cost is so great on these people that it's just another experiment that's going to lead them down the wrong path.
So it's scary. And it's scary that that message is given to people that this might be an option. It might work for some. And I think that the writers of the big book and the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous are the first to tell you that their way is not the only way, and that not everyone needs them or needs a program, that some people do get in trouble drinking. That doesn't mean they have the disease of addiction. That doesn't mean they need the support of AA, and that doesn't mean they need treatment.
Correct.
And I think that's the other important point to make, and you alluded to it in this article, David, but the idea that going to AA is not treatment.
Right, right. Going to AA is community support. It's a program that helps people rebuild their lives once they've stopped drinking. It helps people connect with a power greater than themselves, something outside of themselves. And so it's got a lot of things that help a person get their life back together. But treatment is a place where they're also learning about the realities of their addiction. Treatment is a place where therapy is going on, and therapy is a place where they're stopping and looking at what other issues have been impacting their lives, what traumas they've experienced, what barriers they're having to being able to work any sort of program, where they're having some processing with a therapist and with groups about what's going on, and not just a check in on how you've done with your 12-step meetings in the previous week. The thing I was thinking about with AA is really clear, and the reason they stopped and wrote their stories down and put it all in print was so that people didn't have to lose everything. Because in the early days, back in 1935, people lost their marriages, they lost their health, they were institutionalized, and they were basically in sanitariums until they were dried out, and then they would just be in that cycle. And what they say in the literature is that we put these down on paper so that people can get their lives together because they're able to relate to the stories and see what we did and see how we changed our lives and not have to go so far down the path. But then they're also really clear to say that if you don't want to do this path and you want to continue to try controlling your drinking, go out and do that. Enjoy yourself and see if you're able to. If you're not able to, come on back and we're here and we'll welcome you. I actually heard one person who was going to one of the other fellowships say that his sponsor had told him, well, yeah, it's fine for you to come if you haven't gotten abstinent yet, but it's not okay for you to start working the steps. And I said, no, that's there's no rule about that. Of course you can start working the steps, and maybe it's by working step one that you'll finally be able to decide, okay, I can put this stuff down. Because people within the program start developing their own little quirks or their own little rules, but they're not the program rules. The program is a bunch of suggestions that have worked for a bunch of people, but they're not rules that are getting brought in from other areas.
I think it's very interesting that William White, in his book Slaying the Dragon, talks about the misconceptions that people have, and one of them is in meeting one person from Atlanta and experiencing that person, good, bad, or ugly, leads you to then make a judgment about all the people that live in Atlanta and what kinds of people and lifestyles are inherent in saying my address is in Atlanta. We do have to be careful and separate what is the individual, what is the one citizen of Atlanta, maybe representative very clearly of all Atlantans, but may not have anything to do with that. So one individual may have developed their own process, their own success, that does not necessarily have anything to do with the principles and the ideals that are set forth by AA. So we have to be careful. Not one group, not one meeting, not one individual is necessarily representative of all, and that people who are really interested in finding out what it's all about need to go back and actually read the literature, not the commentaries, not the interpretations, not the side conversations or the bunny trails, but actually read the AA literature about what it is. AA says it is not a religious organization. It is not a temperance movement. It is not a social service agency. It is not an educational agency. It is not a cure or a cure-all or an employment agency. It does not solicit or accept outside funds. It does not run hospitals or treatment centers or prescribe treatment for alcoholics or pay for the hospitalization of alcoholics. These are some of the myriad of misconceptions and misinformation and misideas that people have about what AA is. It is none of those things.
Right.
Well, and I think earlier when you were talking prior to the show about AA is not a self-help group, I think that speaks volumes to it, because much of society thinks of AA as just another self-help group, and that gets into that box. And AA is completely not a self-help group.
It is the antithesis,
right,
of a self-help group, because inherent in the tenets of AA is that you can't do this by yourself. And if you could, then you wouldn't need the support and the structure of an AA program if you could do it yourself. It is absolutely not self-help, nor is it treatment. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what AA is and what it isn't. Thanks so much for listening.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Tracy Pearson at Prissy Tomboy. Are you looking for a way to inspire your pre-teen to teen girl to get outside and play? Listen to the Prissy Tomboy Radio Show every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on America's Web Radio.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. This is Detailing Addiction. I have Michael Daly and David Donaldson here from the Atlanta Healing Center, and we're celebrating, in our own way, AA's 80th birthday and talking a little bit about the role in which AA plays in 21st century recovery, and whether it has become irrelevant, whether it is treatment, whether it is instead of or in addition to, how do most treatment centers and how do we at the Atlanta Healing Center feel that AA fits in? Right before the break, we were talking about the fact that AA is really not a self-help group as most people might label it or might be misled into thinking. It is absolutely not. In fact, inherent in the whole idea of AA is that you have to be a part of a group and that others need to help you in your struggle and your desire to become sober and be in recovery.
Well, as you said in the beginning, it's recovery, unity, and service. So, I mean, that pretty much spells out where they are and what they're doing and how they're doing it.
And I think specifically with the word service, because what they're talking about is carrying the message of hope and recovery to people who are still struggling with the disease of addiction. So they're going to prisons, they're going to churches, they're going to treatment centers, and sharing with people that by not drinking and by getting the support of the fellowship and by, yes, working through the steps, you can have a very enriching, phenomenal life. But that whole idea that it's not a self-help group, I think that in and of itself is one of the barriers, because people want to be able to just grab a book, especially with the other programs like Al-Anon and like Codependence Anonymous. They want to be able to grab a book and read about it and then work through the 12 steps in their own head or in a journal or something, but all by themselves, and then feel like they're either better or that the steps don't work. And what's so crucial about each of the steps is they're all things, they all start with we. We did this. We shared our experience, strength, and hope. We did this together because addiction is a very isolating thing. Once you've gotten so totally wrapped up into your relationship with the bottle or your relationship with your drug, you're completely focused on feeding that one thing, and to try and break that all by yourself is just not likely to happen.
Right. And just like the family members, the people who are suffering with codependency, their whole focus is wrapped up in their loved one who has the disease of addiction and trying to manage and control and mitigate and prevent disaster from happening, and they are isolated as well, and they become less and less focused on taking care of themselves and being healthy and growing. And again, to get out of that, you need other people to help not only mirror your experience, but help you have the courage and the strength and the hope to be able to make the changes that a person with codependency needs to make to also get out of that cycle and let go of their loved one who has the disease of addiction and take care of themselves.
Right.
And walk out of that fear of being exposed, or fear that they're going to run into a neighbor, or they're going to say something silly or something and stupid and be embarrassed, and just recognize that everybody is there to show you that their life was once a mess, and it can get so much better.
Well, and it's always interesting to hear the family members that say, well, we're just not comfortable talking about our problems to other people, you know, and that's they're talking about the problem that they have a problem with talking about the problem. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very interesting that it happens that way, and that it really takes a lot of work and a lot of practice and a lot of help from somebody else who mm-hmm. had that same problem, teaching them how to ask for help and how to make changes.
Because the one aspect of 12-step meetings that is so powerful is that of identifying, and in particular with family members, when they can hear other family members sharing their experience and their stories and find out that the things that they thought were just unique to their own home behind their own closed doors isn't unique at all, that is what this disease looks like, they're able to suddenly just begin opening up and begin sharing and find out that there's a better way of living.
Mm-hmm. And that others are sharing their same pain and their same fear and their same concerns, and that others have been able to manage it, and others have been able to be successful, and others have been able to get through whatever they need to get through. That, I think, is so helpful, not only for the person with the disease of addiction, but for their family members as well, to see that it is possible and that there is hope. And even though I don't have any hope for myself or any faith in myself or any belief that this can get better, I can see other people that have actually been able to do this, and so that in and of itself can give you hope.
Mm-hmm.
When we think about other misconceptions, clearly the AA literature does not say that there's only one form of alcoholism. In fact, it talks about there are many types of alcoholics, and there are many types of folks who get into trouble with alcoholism. So it's not just one thing. It is many different things. They say that moderate drinking may be possible for some people. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible for some people. It is impossible for someone who has the disease of addiction. But for other people with a drinking problem, it may be possible. It does not say that alcoholics should be labeled and confronted aggressively or to be coerced into treatment. In fact, they don't send out missionaries to bars to grab people and haul them into a meeting. They talk about AA gains
attraction.
Its members by attraction. What does that mean?
That means that by example of somebody that's living happy, joyous, and free, a person with the same disease might want what they have. And if they do what that person did, they'll have what they have. So it's promoting by attraction rather than
rather than promotion, mm-hmm. by going in there and saying, this is the way we do it, and this is the way you do it. If you don't want to do it our way, then obviously you're just wanting to stay stuck in your problems.
Well, and that's what I think is a little bit interesting on some of the treatment models that use the 12 steps and that utilize 12-step recovery, except for the fact that when they have somebody that doesn't stay within that model and doesn't play by their rules and doesn't do this or doesn't do that, then they're asked to leave. You know, and here they are basing their treatment model on the 12 steps, which is, would never ask somebody to leave.
Ever, ever.
Ever.
No matter what.
No matter what. And it's just such an ironic thing that you're basing your model on something that you don't believe in.
Yeah, in fact, when you look at the literature, they talk about one of their first stories is we were making progress and we were helping a lot of alcoholics. And this first, a female alcoholic came and wanted help, and we had to sit and decide, can we work with a female alcoholic? And yes, they could. And then another person showed up who had some problem that was too bad to even mention. And as a group, they had to decide, well, can we still help this person? And the answer was yes, of course we can, because the common denominator is alcoholism, and we can help this person who's got these other problems but is also an alcoholic put their life back together. I actually keep looking at that first article, and I'm now being drawn back to those original words that were put on it, faith-based. And, you know, AA says, you know, we're not a religious organization. And they would go so far as to say, we're not a faith-based organization. We're an organization that's getting honest about the problem of alcoholism and getting honest about there is a solution and using whatever your source of a higher power is, which could be the group, which could be God, which could be, you know, whatever it is for you. But that's third. Second,
right.
And third. The first,
right,
is we're going to just be honest about we've got this problem. So it's an honesty-based program that utilizes the experience and trust that others have had to build a sense of faith. It's not faith-based as in faith is first.
It is faith as in hope and love and acceptance.
Exactly.
And experience.
And experience. So, happy birthday, Alcoholics Anonymous. We thank David Donaldson and Michael Daly for being here today and look forward to seeing you next week on Detailing Addiction.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.